All season long during the NFL season, Wednesdays will also feature Tom E. Curran, NBC Sports Boston. Tom joins us on the line right now. Hi, Tom. How are you?
I'm tremendous, Dale. How are you? Hi, Wiggy. Hi, Richard.
Hello.
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 How's my phone sound?
Not bad.
Better than Daron Harmon and James White from yesterday. So far, so good.
So let's
talk to them.
We were just talking about Brian Hoyer before we brought you into the conversation. What's your take on the Patriots' releasing of Hoyer, and could they have just made a deal with somebody and gotten a 6th, 7th round draft pick, that sort of thing?
It had to happen, in my estimation. You have a team that's too deep across the board that has really no need for an accessory like a third quarterback. When you're going to need linebackers, you're definitely going to need wide receivers, you're definitely going to need offensive linemen to come in and off this roster to figure out exactly what kind of combos you want, cornerback as well. So I think that the release of Brian Hoyer made a hell of a lot of sense, especially from what we saw from Stidham over the last 4 weeks. As far as a trade, every team in the NFL would have known that if you start making phone calls on Brian Hoyer, you're about to release him, which they probably could have figured out in the first place. If I'm the general manager for another team and the Patriots are asking for a 6th, I'm sitting there saying, do I want to give up a theoretically 22-year-old player I'm going to have control over for 4 years in order to bring a guy in who I'm going to be able to make the same pitch to in 2 hours when he's released? So that's my theory as to why a deal probably wasn't able to be made. Additionally, it would not surprise me in the least if the same way Bill Belichick left Jimmy Garoppolo swaddled neatly on the porch for the San Francisco 49ers, doing him a solid, he decided to let Brian Hoyer seek his best place of employment as well.
Now, after Hoyer was released, Chris Gasper in the Globe wrote an article, and in part of it he said, quote, Hoyer was collateral damage in the tug of war between Brady and Belichick for top billing in the Patriots' long-running dynasty. Do you see truth in that, or what's your take on that?
I think that's an unbelievable leap, and I give Chris credit for making that leap and giving us fodder to plumb and dive into it. But there were two things he said. One other thing was that we, quote, are being force-fed Jarrett Stidham.
Right.
I don't understand why a backup quarterback drafted in the 4th round who shows a great deal of promise is a force feeding. Was it a force feeding when Rohan Davey was, kept as a 2nd quarterback or Ryan Mallett? Look, the Patriots have an expiring contract at the quarterback position in March. How they resolve it or whether they resolve it, we'll see. But until then, you damn well better have a young quarterback ready to take over if nothing happens with the contract of Tom Brady. So the force feeding I disagreed with, and the continual beating of the drum that there's some ongoing competition between Belichick and Brady for who deserves more credit and who's going to be looked upon more fondly by history is absolutely cuckoo. It's contrived, it's fake, it's false, and I've been hearing it for about 10 years from people who started off with the Bill Belichick wants to prove. Wants to prove he can win without Tom Brady. Like, that's the biggest incentive for him, aside from, tearing the throat out of every competitor that he goes against just on basic principle. He wants to prove something about Tom Brady. I think it's ludicrous.
Now, we got obviously opening game coming up. How much you think we see Josh Gordon out there? I think that's probably everybody's number one question. He only played in the 4th preseason game, but how much do you think we see him out there and the Patriots trying to get him involved?
I think it'll be a small plate of plays, Wiggy. Mm-hmm. I think that they would have a limited amount of things that they're going to want to put on him, because I don't think that his football conditioning is going to be great. Even on that pass interference he drew about 35 yards downfield in the final preseason game, didn't look like his timing was great. He didn't really get way off the ground. He drew the penalty. But we saw it last year. It was a big problem for him when he came over from Cleveland, even though he had been in and out of their training camp. And it's going to be a problem now. I would say probably if he plays 30 to 35 plays, I think that would be an awful lot. If they run 70. I don't know if they're going to be a 70-play team.
Do you think the same could be said about Demaryius Thomas as well?
Probably. Hmm. Probably. When we look at if Tom Brady throws it 30 times, he's probably going to target – James White, 10. Julian Edelman, 10. Rex Burkhead, 2 or 3. Sony Michel, 2 or 3. Nothing for Ryan Izzo. And then whoever else among the wide receivers gets looks will be interesting to see. But I don't think it's going to be a big role that night for those outside guys.
If you were guessing Sunday night when the Patriots play against the Steelers, do you think the first time the Patriots punt return team is on the field that Gunnar Olszewski is the returner?
It depends on whether or not Julian Edelman's thumb is an issue or not. I've been told that it is not. So you don't want to have the opener with a cornerback from Bemidji State, especially if it's a plus 50 punt. I guarantee you if it's a plus 50 punt, I hate when I guarantee stuff. Too late. I guarantee you if the punt returner's heels are on the 10-yard line, that punt returner will be Edelman. Now, maybe if you know the Steelers are punting, they'll put Olszewski out there if the Steelers are punting from their own goal line and it's a middle-of-the-field thing. But I would imagine that on a safety-type situation, it would be Edelman.
How do you compare this 53-man roster to last year's 53-man roster going into the season?
Defensively, they are as good as or better than last year. Plus, they have that running start with the experience of the guys who are coming back, especially in the secondary and the second level. You know, Juwan Bentley is here. He was last year as well, but he's going to be here for a while. The fact that Trey Flowers can leave this team and what we've seen from Michael Bennett, even though he hasn't torn people apart in the games, the potential for him to have a huge year is interesting. I think they're a much, much, much better team defensively, offensively. When they took the field last year, they had the best tight end in football. Now they have Ryan Izzo. God bless him. Maybe he'll turn out to be a 15-year pro. But they don't have that. And that was the key component last year in their season opening win, you know, against Houston. It was having Gronkowski out there to dominate the game. They didn't have Edelman. They have Edelman now. Wide receiver is kind of a wash. You know, they went in with Hogan and Dorsett and Gronkowski as their outside guys. Cordarrelle Patterson was running around doing stuff. But it's kind of a wash. I mean, it wasn't a good group of skill position players aside from running back this year. I mean, last year, and it's the same this year. Running back and Edelman are their offensive strengths.
Well, you talk about the tight end position. I think offensively, when you look at just the team on paper this year versus last year, week one, their wide receivers were Cordarrelle Patterson, Philip Dorsett, and Chris Hogan. I think they have the potential on paper to be better. And then I think it's probably about week 9 or 10 we see 87 back out on the football field.
Oh, God. Here we go.
I know they're going to give N'Keal Harry 87 when he comes back?
Nice.
I didn't know that. I thought he's going with like 80 or something.
I know you don't agree with that, but what makes you say that he's not coming back? What is the determining factor, in your opinion, that he's not coming back, Rob Gronkowski?
He just didn't love football by the time he was done. I think he was beaten down mentally, and we've seen that from him breaking down during that Abacus CBD thing last week to comments that he made with the LeBron James barbershop thing where he's talking about, you know, he started thinking about this in 2017. I think it took all of his will to make it through 2018 and 2017, and a lot of it he did for his teammates. I think that it wasn't – look, Wiggy, you played for Bill.
Mm-hmm.
You probably reveled in it. You probably relished it. You probably loved the way Bill did things. You also played alongside guys. You said, gee, this is killing me. This is wearing my ass down. You know, Ted Johnson acknowledged this as well. Some guys can take a certain way of being coached, and some guys have a harder time with it. And I think that Gronk, especially because of all the injuries and his sense of football mortality, I think he had a much greater sense of, am I at the finish line yet? Because I'm starting to really hate this. Where am I wrong on that? I mean it. You played.
Well, I think the thing that I would ask is, why is he so adamant, or, you know, why is it about him? When you hear him talk, it's about the possibility of him returning and him saying, hey, you know what? I could still come back and I could play and I could do this. I think ultimately that itch gets too much for him and he misses it. And then that's what brings him back to this game.
See, I think that's 1,000,000% marketing. He used his body to be a vehicle and a vessel for him, and he created a persona, which wasn't bogus at all, of Gronk that he can actually market going forward. We all want him to come back, so So if Gronk says, I'm never coming back, hey, come over and look at my my new CBD marketing thing. I'm definitely not going to announce a return.
Right.
No one's going to show up. If you tease a return, we all show up. We talk about it for 2 weeks.
Well, and if you return and you play well, now we all go out and buy CBD.
That's right.
Yeah, but if you – I mean, I just think he's – I think his entire family is probably breathing a sigh of relief that he's not going to be putting himself in harm's way.
Tom Brady obviously is the opening quarterback Sunday night against the Pittsburgh Steelers. Is he the quarterback for the opener for the Patriots next season opener?
More likely than not. More likely than not, Dale, I would say. Yeah. I wouldn't say that the percentage of him not being the quarterback should be taken fairly seriously, though. I mean, this is unprecedented for him to be entering a contract year. It's unprecedented for the Patriots, and both sides chose it. And he specifically said, look, if I'm going to go into this year on a one-year deal, which basically he has, I don't want you to be able to control me for next year. So he's the one who's opened the door to being elsewhere. So we can't dismiss it and say, oh, it'll never happen. Robert Kraft won't let it happen. Bill Belichick won't let it happen. Tom could never get his mind around playing someplace else. So because of the facts related to it, we have to leave the opportunity or at least the potential open, in my estimation.
Tom, I saw Phil Perry's article about how the Patriots going into the year are the oldest team in the NFL. Does that speak to some of the misses they've had in recent drafts, and maybe there isn't as many guys under 25 as there are on other teams? Or is it just, hey, they have a 42-year-old quarterback, they went with Demaryius Thomas on the 53-man instead of N'Keal Harry? Like, what do you read into them having the oldest roster in the league?
A lot of it has to do with the secondary. Jason McCourty, Devin McCourty, Patrick Chung, then you have 33-year-old Michael Bennett. You know, they've traded those guys out. They've not restocked necessarily at safety with younger guys. They're trying to see if Obi Melifonwu or Jawan Williams can somehow supplant at some point McCourty and Chung, but I think those guys are pretty solid. Flowers out, Bennett in. It's that second contract stuff, I think, that has gotten them to a point where they steer clear of it. Like, for instance, Jamie Collins would have been a second contract guy a few years ago, or Malcolm Butler would have been in his second contract, and they instead have found some of the lower-priced veterans. And I'm sure that there's a litany of reasons for it, including being stripped of draft picks in 2016 and having small drafts and having guys like Antonio Garcia not be able to stick with the team because of illness. So there's a lot of different reasons, but I think that those are all parts of it. I don't think it makes them worse, but I do, and I think that they have brought in a good amount of young talent the last 2 years, but there are spots on the team. You look at the graying of it and say that's a place to be concerned.
Now, the N'Keal Harry situation here, right? To me, I think this is so interesting. You draft this kid in the first round and high expectations, a lot of disappointment now that he's on IR. Nobody kind of really knows what the injury is, so maybe there's some light you can shed on that. But it's also the Demaryius Thomas thing. The decision on N'Keal Harry on whether they want to activate him and put him on the roster permanently or keep Demaryius Thomas there, when do we see that happening? Do we see that playing out where they ultimately just stay with Demaryius, or do they activate and bring N'Keal Harry and it's the both of them back out there? What do you kind of see with N'Keal Harry's future this year?
The interesting thing is they got into the same situation with Duke Dawson last year.
Mm-hmm.
Brought him back from IR, and then he never dressed. He never played after that. I'm not saying that's going to happen with N'Keal Harry. I think he'll have more relevance to the offense immediately. I think he's a better athlete at this point than both Demaryius Thomas and Josh Gordon. At 22, he hasn't had the injuries that Demaryius Thomas has. He hasn't led the life that Josh Gordon has. So there are going to be plays that N'Keal Harry should be able to make that those guys can't. So he's going to have relevance. Whether it becomes a Thomas or N'Keal Harry or a Gordon or N'Keal Harry conversation, that'll be interesting. Maybe it's Gunner, or maybe it's a linebacker or someone else gets released, or a depth offensive lineman, and they go with even more tight ends, wide receivers. But it's interesting that Wiggy, they went and decided to say, you know what, Demaryius Thomas coming off an ACL at 31 is probably going to have more value to us over the first 8 weeks than N'Keal Harry coming off calf, ankle, lower leg injury, whatever it is, which we've never established. So I thought that was interesting.
Final question before we let you go. Ben Roethlisberger at Gillette Stadium has a career record of 1-4. 9 touchdowns, 5 interceptions, a career rating here at Gillette Stadium of 87.8. He arrives here Sunday night without Le'Veon Bell, without Antonio Brown. Are you in on the Steelers, or do you think this is going to be a tough night?
I think it's going to be a tough night for both teams, and I think the game will be played in the teens. I think it's going to be a very difficult game for the Steelers to make any headway because they'll have answers for Juju Smith-Schuster. And I think the Patriots are going to have a hard time moving the ball a little bit as well because those, although they have Devin Bush and Mark Barron at their linebacker spots, those are like 230-pound players, very fast, sideline to sideline. I expect the Patriots are going to line up and just try and steamroll those guys, and we'll see whether or not they can do that. But I think it'll be a low-scoring game, Dale.